The Force Field is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Listen to other great tech podcasts at www.techpodcasts.com.
From Charlotte, North Carolina, for IT service providers, it's The Force Field with Rick Savoia. And now, here is your host, Rick Savoia.
Greetings, providers. Welcome to the unofficial podcast for IT service providers, The Force Field. I'm your host, Rick Savoia, and during the next half hour, we'll cover the news, views, reviews, and interviews for and about the IT industry and the Force Field community. Our call-in segment is open to all listeners Saturday nights from 10:30 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern. Call 407-278-5698. That's 407-278-5698. Or you can call in via Skype at Savoia Computer if you'd like to be part of the show. In our last episode, we talked with an IT professional and merchant whose personal experience with fraudulent credit card transactions prompted him to create an online resource to inform businesses everywhere about both the rewards and risks of accepting credit cards. This week, we'll continue our discussion with our guest and learn more about the option of accepting plastic as a form of payment from our customers. We'll talk about how to set up a merchant account to process credit card transactions and how you can protect your business from credit card fraud. But first, let's take a look at what's going on elsewhere in the IT industry. OnForce announced that demand for on-site service was strong in the third quarter, despite the weakening economy. According to the OnForce Services Marketplace Index report, released November 17th, on-site service for consumer electronics is still in great demand and is expected to maintain its current level throughout the fourth quarter. The Consumer Electronics Association recently projected that CE sales will grow 3.5% this holiday season, despite the down economy, so we know that consumers will still make major CE purchases that require professional installation, OnForce CEO Peter Cannoni said in a press release. Many OEMs, VARs, and retailers have yet to figure out the last mile of the consumer electronics sale, expert installation and support. This report helps show IT and CE companies how they can make on-site services a profitable part of their business and increase their customers' satisfaction, Cannoni said. The company projects its total volume of service work to be 60 million by the end of 2008. The OnForce Services Marketplace Index report is available at www.onforce.com/OSMI/Q308. What could be better than listening to the latest episode of The Force Field? Why, listening to The Force Field while relaxing with a hot cup of coffee from your official Force Field mug, while wearing a comfortable Force Field t-shirt and cap, of course. And now you can, at the Force Field Podcast Store, the first, only, and official store for the Force Field swag. Sit back, relax, and listen to The Force Field with your favorite beverage in the Force Field official mug. Come on, you know you want one. Now we have them. So why deprive yourself? Get one today. You earned it. Let's face it, everyone has a t-shirt. Not everyone has the Force Field t-shirt. Now you can have one. Now how cool is that? We have t-shirts, golf shirts, mugs, baseball caps, and other great gear. You can even get the Force Field official brew beer stein to enjoy the Force Field official brew. Whatever that may be. To order, simply go to theforcefield.net and click Store on the menu bar. Tell the world you dare to listen to The Force Field. Visit the Force Field Podcast Store and order your official Force Field gear today. Microsoft has thrown in the towel on Windows Live OneCare. A post in the Windows Live OneCare team blog November 18th announced that Redmond will end subscriptions to the service July 30th, 2009, and offer a free anti-malware solution during the second half of 2009, codenamed Morrow. Windows Live OneCare has often been considered to be a marginal anti-malware solution by many in the industry, and often scored lower than some of its competitors in anti-malware performance tests. The service was also criticized for its firewall, which critics asserted was somewhat weak. It's interesting to note that Microsoft launched Windows Live OneCare in beta 2 years ago, and version 2.5 was released in July of this year. 2 years is not a long time for full product development in the marketplace, and while the service is not considered a very effective solution, remember to keep in mind that, compared to the experience of other seasoned security vendors, such as Symantec and Trend Micro, Microsoft is new to this arena. They need some time to learn the ropes. Then again, perhaps they just aren't cut out for this kind of game. After all, they did buy their way into it by purchasing a security company. That's sort of like paying for their own corner of the ring in a boxing match. Just because you have a pair of gloves on doesn't mean you know how to box. By the way, when I was researching this story, I went to the Windows Live OneCare team blog site. At the top of the page for the blog entry about the phase-out of Windows Live OneCare was a banner advertising an anti-malware security solution for Kaspersky Lab. And that's the news in the force field. I am very particular about what goes in the force field, and I only promote products and services that I either use myself or would use if I needed them. This week I would like to introduce you to a new sponsor who I've been using myself for reliable web hosting to keep the force field online 24/7. GoDaddy.com. GoDaddy's hosting plans are bigger and better than ever with 99% uptime, free 24/7 support, and no annual commitment. If you want to make an impact online, GoDaddy.com has what you need. .com names as low as $1.99, plus world-class hosting, fast and easy website builders, and much more. Here's the best part. As a listener of the Force Field, enter the code BLU101 when you check out and save an additional 10% on your web hosting order. You want reliable web hosting at a great price? Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com. Some restrictions apply, so see site for details. That's GoDaddy.com. You're listening to The Force Field, and this is the part of the show I look forward to the most, as it is the opportunity to talk to my fellow professionals in the field. If you'd like to talk, you can call me at 407-CPU-JOY-8. That's 407-278-5698. Or through Skype at Savoya Computer. If you don't have Skype, simply go to the Force Field podcast episodes page at theforcefield.net and click the Skype icon located on the right sidebar. The download is free, the call is free, and the show is free. And you can't beat free. So call in and dare to enter the Force Field. In our last episode, we talked with Tom Mahoney, founder and owner of Merchant911.org, a website he created to help businesses prevent chargebacks on credit card transactions and fight credit card fraud. We learned how his experiences with fraudulent credit card transactions prompted him to create his website, discussed the benefits and risks of accepting credit cards in your business, and found out which credit cards are the best and worst to accept as a merchant. This week, we're going to continue our discussion with Tom and hear more about credit card merchant accounts. He will tell us how to shop around when setting up a credit card merchant account, what you can do to minimize the risk of a chargeback on a credit card transaction, and how you can use the tools on his website to protect yourself and your business from credit card fraud, as we conclude with part two of our two-part series on Merchant 911, Accepting Credit Cards. And we're talking to Tom. Hi, Tom. Welcome back to the Force Field.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
If someone wants to accept credit cards for their business, what is your advice for shopping around for such a service?
Well, I think you need to look very carefully at a couple things. Number one is Obviously, as you mentioned earlier, the turnaround time between the time of the transaction and the time that you get your funding, and depending on the type of business you do, you know, a few days here or there may not be an issue, and typically that's about all it amounts to is a couple days one way or the other. But I think the primary thing that you need to look at is the fees that they charge, because they're pretty much able to charge whatever the market will bear. And also be very, very aware that there are different rates. A lot of people don't realize this, but the merchant actually pays for the awards that cardholders get. So you're going to find that reward cards carry a higher rate than a regular card. And it also depends a lot on whether or not you swipe the card, whether you manually enter the card, whether you're doing a card present or a card not present transaction. So there's just a myriad of things. And I defy anyone who does not have three business degrees to try to understand what they're getting when they get their monthly statements. But definitely you've got to be really, really careful and ask a lot of questions about the rates, what the rates are, what tiers and what brackets they, as a merchant, are going to be in. It, particularly with online merchants, there are different rates depending on what type of thing that the merchant is selling and how much of a risk is involved. I always hate to say it, but you know, the credit card companies look at the risk that is involved also, even though it's minimal to them. Consumer electronics, computers, cameras, that kind of thing, you're probably going to end up paying a higher rate than you would with, say, personal care products. They have different tiers depending on the amount of risk that they perceive they've got.
Mm-hmm. I encountered that myself when I first started my computer business as a system builder. That was one of the factors in calculating the rate. They asked me when I first set up my account, they said, well, what are you going to be selling? Oh, computers. Oh, computers. Oh, okay. Well, we'll have to give you this rate. And I thought about that. I thought that was a little odd at first, but then I realized how it all works. And I thought, okay, there's a little logic in there. Because there is a higher risk with selling consumer electronics, I can see that. But still, they also add the other junk fees and hidden costs and things in there. I think they got their money. I think they got their money out of it.
Oh, they definitely get their money out of it. They'll even charge a monthly fee to get the statement.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That was another reason I got rid of my American Express, because they offered an online statement for free. And even after I signed up for that, they continued to send me the paper statement, and they would charge me $5 for every. Yep, they'd charge me $5 a pop.
Gotta love them. Gotta love them.
Yeah.
Credit card companies are not our friends.
No, found that out a long time ago. Oh, what about services like PayPal? Is it any easier, cheaper, or safer for the merchant?
I'm not sure, Rick, whether it's any cheaper. I do believe it's safer because PayPal does quite a bit of their own fraud screening. And it's certainly a lot easier to interface with PayPal. I mean, you can sign up for a PayPal account, get a verified bank account through them. I accept donations at Merchant 911, and I have them. Obviously, there's no risk of loss there, because if it happens to be a chargeback, well, I just didn't get my... You know, I didn't get my donation, but of course I'll pay a chargeback fee. But there's a lot to be said for PayPal. I think they're a very good, and I don't want to say they're a good alternative, but they're certainly a good second method of accepting credit cards, because you can accept credit cards through PayPal. And they do a lot of their own fraud screening. And, you know, there's some other services out there that are much more niche market, particularly for digital download products. There's companies like Kagi that I use on our Prevent Chargeback site with the course that I wrote. And these are very, very good alternatives to accepting credit cards, but I don't know that I could recommend PayPal only as a way of going. You know, that's an individual call again, but I don't recommend as the only way of accepting it, accepting payments, but certainly it's an excellent second way of doing it.
Well, personally, the way I work it out for PayPal is I actually cut out my merchant processing service, which I had been using NPC for 10 years. And I went PayPal only because I found out that, well, you know, my customers didn't have to have a PayPal account to be able to pay with a credit card through PayPal as long as I had a merchant account with PayPal set up. And it didn't really have the same fees that my other merchant account had. Not just the per transaction fee, but also the monthly fees.
Right, right. And then there again, you know, it boils down to a merchant's decision, what he's selling, what he anticipates his volume to be, and so forth. So, you know, it's always an individual choice. I can never recommend one over another. You know, I'm not in the business of telling people how to run their business. But or really even giving them advice. The thrust of what I do is teaching people how to do their best due diligence to protect credit card fraud. And related to that, I think PayPal does have certain advantages over dealing directly with the credit card companies.
Well, now getting back for just a moment to the processing services themselves, when somebody's going to sign up for one of these services, obviously they need the, if they're going to have a store, they're going to need the equipment. If not, they're going to need some software usually to set themselves up with that. Is it advisable to go through that company for all the equipment and the supplies and the software, or is it better for them to go buy it used and set themselves up? I mean, it was for me, but in my case, I bought the card swiping equipment, everything secondhand, had it reprogrammed when I set up my merchant account, and then I did it for a fraction of the cost, and I did it without having to sign a contract with the merchant services company because I didn't purchase the equipment from them, so I was pretty much a free agent. I could sign up with them, and if I didn't like their service, I could go somewhere else. But do you recommend that sort of a route a good deal of the time, or is it better to go through them for some of the equipment and other supplies?
Well, you kind of have to look at both sides of that. You know, yes, you save some money, but on the other hand, if that equipment decides to stop working on you one day, you've got two choices. In either case, you're probably going to be out of service for a couple of days. You're going to have to buy another used piece of equipment and have it reprogrammed, or you're going to have to go to your processor and buy from them. So, you know, that's one of the things you need to look at. And some processors rent the equipment, in which case, if it stops working, you call them up and you say, my terminal is not working anymore, and they'll FedEx you another one and you'll have it the next day. So, you know, you've got to look at that aspect of it as well. You know, does it pay me to rent it? Does it pay me to buy it secondhand and pay to have it reprogrammed? The programming fee is probably irrelevant because they're going to charge you whether you get it from them or not.
True.
So,
true.
Again, it's just something you really have to take a close look at for your own business needs.
Okay. But from your perspective, do you think it's more expedient to rent, lease, or actually outright buy the equipment?
Well, in our case, we just outright purchased it from them, and the reason that we did that was because our needs were a little bit unique. Number one, we have a brick and mortar store, and all our online transactions get entered at that point of sale terminal. Mm-hmm. Our volume is such that we can spend the time in the evening to take the online orders and actually manually put them into the point of sale terminal. So we wanted to make sure that was done correctly and that the terminal was able to distinguish whether it was an online transaction or an in-person transaction, because the fees are different and they're going to drop you like a hot potato if you try to pull one over on them on that situation. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that we had going for us or against us, depending on how you look at it, was that since we also were doing a lot of trade shows and that kind of thing, we needed a wireless transaction system to go along with it. And we actually purchased both. We looked at the option of just using the wireless point-of-sale terminal in the store, but decided that we would actually go with two separate ones. So the wireless system is a backup in case the one in the store dies. Mm-hmm. But we felt that because of the unique needs that we had, we could go to the processor and say, and by the way, we've changed processors twice since we started for a lot of the same reason that everybody else does. But we told them, you know, this is what we do. This is how we do our business. Set us up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we relied on them to give us what we needed, and they did, and they did a reasonably good job.
Now, we're searching around, we're shopping around for a service, and we find something that works for us. We get ourselves all set up, whether we buy or lease or purchase the equipment, and we start accepting credit cards for our sales and our service and our support, that sort of thing. We're all set up, we're ready to go, we're in business. And we get a credit card, and it turns out to be a fraudulent transaction. If a merchant is a victim of credit card fraud at this point, what do you recommend is their best course of action? What should they do first?
Well, I think the first thing that they need to do is respond to the request from the processor, because what typically happens is the cardholder, whether it be the actual, well, it's always the actual cardholder, but it may or may not have been a fraudulent transaction. He just might be trying to get something for nothing. But the cardholder is going to call the issuing bank and say, I didn't do this transaction. And the bank then is going to do a chargeback through the processor, and the processor is now out of the money. And so he's going to come to the merchant. If you haven't saved any paperwork or saved any records of that transaction, once you get that chargeback, you're pretty much out of luck. So the first thing you've got to do is save all the transaction information, save any emails that might have gone back and forth between you and the customer. But then when the chargeback actually comes in, you've got to respond with everything you've got right up front to the credit card company. And if you don't think that you got a chance in you know where to reverse this, then the best thing to do probably is to credit the account, because you might get away with not having to pay that $15 to $25 chargeback fee. But if you present everything that you've got and you can make a really good case, maybe you've got a 50-50 chance of winning.
So it's a matter of deciding whether you're going to stand down or fight, pretty much. If you stand down, you have a chance, you'll lose the transaction, but you won't pay the fee necessarily. But if you fight, then it's pretty much the luck of the draw there.
It is pretty much the luck of the draw, and I'm thinking 50-50 might even be a little bit on the optimistic side. Hmm. So, you know, yeah, it all depends. But if you've got all your ducks in a row, that's your best chance of winning a chargeback, is to be able to prove that, yes, that person really did make that transaction. And I know it because he lives in Denver, Colorado. Here's an email exchange that I had with him. And if you look at that IP address, you will see that that IP address comes from Denver, Colorado. And here is his shipping address. And here is his billing address as verified by the bank. And they match. And here's my authorization number. And, you know, I verified his phone number with the bank. And it's jive with the phone number he gave me on the order. That's your best chance.
And of course, I guess before all of this happens, and before they even really start taking credit card transactions, the first thing to do is probably to join Merchant 911.
Well, yeah, I'd like to say that. We've talked a lot about, you know, you should do this, you should do that. And, you know, you can see that in almost any article online you read about preventing credit card fraud from a merchant's point of view. But we go a little bit beyond telling you what you need to do. We tell you how to do it. We provide the tools for it. And I wrote an online course called Preventing E-commerce Chargebacks. It's available at preventchargebacks.com. Retails for $38. And Merchant 911 has a member-only area. And by the way, I do screen every single application that comes in because I don't want the bad guys in there seeing how we do things. And we have a searchable database of over 250,000 records. We provide a service where the merchant can enter the first 6 digits of the credit card number, find out what bank issued that. We have a searchable database of anonymous email addresses. We have a searchable database of anonymous proxy servers. So we provide a lot of tools for merchants to use to do some of the things that we recommend that they do.
Now, to let my listeners know, I joined Merchant 911 somewhere around 2002 or 2003. It's kind of hard to remember. It was that far back.
It's November of 2002. Yeah. I looked it up last night.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah.
But I've been a member of Merchant 911 for a while, and I found it very informative, very educational. There's a lot of good material there, and I get these emails from you from time to time. Some of them are alerts to various things. Some of them are informational, but they're always very helpful.
Well, we try. We're monitoring a lot of different blogs out there on the internet. If you're familiar with the alerts that Google does, I subscribe to Google Alerts for terms like credit card fraud, transaction processors, and that kind of thing. So I try to keep my finger as best I can in my spare time on what's going on in the industry. I actually have several pseudonyms that I hang out in the Carter sites. Yeah, it's kind of frustrating because I watch credit card account numbers being sold $50-$75 a pop, and they're guaranteed to be good. And, you know, there's honor among thieves. These guys are good to their word. I've seen where, you know, they do a transaction, they sell somebody 10 credit card numbers, they guarantee them to be good, and the guy comes back and says, well, 2 of them weren't any good, and he sends them 2 more. It's just amazing the amount of information that's out there and available. So a lot of what we do on Merchant 911 isn't something that you wouldn't find anywhere else, but we've got it all in one place. And, you know, the price is free, and you can't beat that price.
No, and actually that's the line I use. It's free. You can't beat free. It's definitely worth joining. Now, the big question, where do we sign up?
Well, you can go to merchant911.org. And you can see what we've got to offer. Take a look at the blog, see what we're putting out there. And, you know, we're telling it like it is, quite frankly, Rick. You know, if I see a service out there that I think is not good for a merchant, I'm going to say so. Conversely, even before you become a member, we have a merchant resource section available. We recommend not only some full-service processors, but some fraud screeners. And, you know, I'm very upfront about it. Some of them I have an affiliate relationship with. Others I don't. Some of the services that we recommend in the merchant resource section are actually free services. There's actually a free service out there where you can block entire countries from coming into your website and seeing it. And if you're doing an online business, you don't want people from Indonesia coming in there and trying to buy from you. You don't even want them to know you exist.
Absolutely.
So, and that's a free service. So there's a lot of recommendations there that are available to merchants. And once you get inside the member area and you become a member, then, like I said, you've got all the searchable databases. You've got the alert email list. You've got the chat list where we kind of exchange information about what's going on in the fraud world. We've also got a bulletin board out there that from time to time is very active. So there's a lot to be had, but go to merchant911.org and sign up by all means.
And best of all, it's free. And you can't
beat absolutely.
Free. Well, if they need to email you or contact you, can they email you right there from the site as well?
Yes, there is an email address on there. It's not available to the spam bots, but and that's something else we offer. Just as a kind of a side note, We have a JavaScript code out there that will actually, you know, it's an email link, but if you look at the source code, there's no sign of an email address there, and it served me very well.
And that's all at merchant911.org.
Org. That's
correct. .org, not .com, .org. Now, yes. One other thing real quick, do you take donations?
Yes, we do take donations, only from members. You know, we don't want to be beholden to anybody. You know, like I told you the other day, I do all this in my free time. I actually have a full-time career as a network manager in the IT field. So I do this in my own time. I do not charge for membership. So, you know, donations are cheerfully accepted. The amount of advertising money that comes in just barely pays for hosting services.
Mm-hmm. I understand that.
I'm sure you do.
Yeah. Well, Tom, thanks a lot for your time on the Force Field today. I really appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity, Rick. It's a win-win situation. I think we're kind of in the same business here, and that's getting information out to merchants and potential merchants.
You know, there's a lot more to this, just like there is with the entire IT industry. There's a lot more to it than just having a tech business. You've got to know what to watch out for.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And of course, Rick, you know, being in IT, you're very familiar with a lot of three-letter acronyms. And, you know, my word to potential merchants is that if you don't know what PCI and DSS are, you better get yourself educated because you need to know that.
Mm-hmm. Right. Absolutely. Well, Tom, thanks a lot. I really appreciate it. And hopefully we'll talk to you again sometime soon.
Well, I'll be glad to come back anytime and share whatever information I can, Rick.
All right. Well, take care, Tom. Thanks a lot. Have a great day.
Yep, you too. Bye-bye.
Well, folks, our time is up. I would like to thank everyone for listening, my kids for allowing me to do this without interruptions, and my wife for just putting up with me. If you would like to comment on the program, you can email me at rick@theforcefield.net or visit our website at www.theforcefield.net. Opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not represent The Force Field, Savoia Computer, or advertisers. All music on the show is original and was written and performed by Brother Rancid and the Brand New Pygmies. Our announcer is Felix DeCat. The show is produced and distributed by Savoia Computer. For The Force Field, I'm Rick Savoia. May The Force Field be with you.